transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is money holding you back? And the numbers to get coaching on money and unleashing your potential and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., you can dial your country code, usually 001-760-918-4300. And I'm going to spend as much of the show today with you, taking your calls and coaching you around money as I can. So go ahead again, 866-254-1579. But I do want to set the table a little bit first. And I want to do that by just talking about, you know, so it's a question, is money holding you back? And that's kind of a yes, no question. And if it's a no, then has it ever held you back? Do you fear it might hold you back in the future? And if that's a no, then, you know, enjoy the show. I, you know, have a pleasant enough voice and we usually have nice conversations. But if the answer at any level is yes, then listen on. Because I'm gonna suggest that money has never held anyone back. What holds us back is our unrecognized thinking about money. And our unrecognized thinking about ourselves, and our unrecognized thinking or misinterpreted thinking about the world. And I'm not going to just leave that out there. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Now, I've been fortunate in my life to have met people who have billions and to have worked with people who have no money at all and, you know, literally living in the van. Actually, I've never worked with somebody who lived in a van by the river. He lived in a van under a bridge. But, you know, the same idea. I've worked with homeless people, and I've worked with people whose homes are just some of the most beautiful homes I've ever seen anywhere in the world. And what I've found, and it wasn't what I expected to find, is that the amount of money somebody had was in no way a predictor of the amount of worry about money that somebody had, of the level of happiness that somebody had, and of the ease that somebody carried their lives with. And that surprised me, because I thought that on the whole, there would at least be trends. But it wasn't just that there weren't trends. It was almost random. So I've met happy millionaires and miserable millionaires. I've met happy homeless people and miserable homeless people, and happy and miserable people at every level in between. And the only connection that I found with money was that the people who had the most thinking about money had the most stress about money. The people that had the least thinking about money had the least stress about money. The people who had the most thinking about money had kind of, on the whole, and this is now a generalization, the worst ideas about what to do to get it, more of it, and what to do with it. And the people who didn't have much thinking about it seemed to have just very simple, very elegant, great ideas about what to do with it, how to get more of it, what it was for in their lives. And again, this makes sense to me now, because I've seen that that's just a general truth about life. The less we have on our minds, the better life gets. The more present we are to life, the more present we are to the energy behind life, to that deeper presence that's always there. But, you know, we just spend so much of our time so caught up in our thinking that we don't notice it. And money is just one of those things that people think about a lot. Now, sometimes people don't think about money because they think they have it. Sometimes people don't think about money because they don't think they'll ever have it. But the real art that I've seen in living with and working with money in your life is to be able to not have that much thinking about it, regardless of how much of it you physically have in any given moment. And I've experienced this whole range in myself. I've never been homeless as such, because there's always been at least somebody with a sofa. But, you know, there have been times where I haven't had a home. And I live in an absolutely beautiful home at the moment, and everywhere in between. What's been interesting to see in myself is that the amount of money I happen to have at any given moment has not been a reliable indicator of how happy I'm going to be or even how worried about money I'm going to be. These really are disconnected things. They have nothing to do with one another, how much thinking you have about money and how much money you have. However, how much thinking you have about money will determine how much of an obstacle money seems to be in your life, how much money seems to be holding you back. But as with everything else, you don't have money problems, you have thinking problems. Right? There's a great video. If you go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/MNeil, there's a beautiful 15-minute piece from Showtime about a coach, a life coach, who's been working at the University of Michigan for many, many years. And in the video, he's talking to some of the student athletes, and he says, you don't have a drinking problem, you got a thinking problem. Well, you don't have a money problem, you've got a thinking problem. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So if you want to talk with me directly, the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin today out in Chicago with Diane. Diane, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello. I think I have a thinking problem.
Yeah, me too. Everyone, so, come on, everyone. Hi, Diane. Okay, yeah, we're good.
My name is Diane, and I have a thinking problem. So I've been dating my guy for several months now. He is a teacher and travels around and giving lectures and workshops and things like that. There is one coming up next month, and I usually go to it. I am kind of broke this year, and so it's this awkward situation. As far as you know, now that I'm his girlfriend, is that something that I do or don't have to pay for? And I'm not quite sure what to ask, and he hasn't offered, and kind of makes me feel bad if he's not offering. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm just trying to imagine. It's funny you're saying that, and I was thinking, I was just trying to imagine, like, charging my wife to come on one of my seminars.
Right?
You know, that would be weird.
Last night I said, oh, and I wasn't even thinking about it because I'd forgotten. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I've got a book, that workshop. And he goes, oh, yeah, right, that's coming up.
Well, look, here's where we're like two gossiping women here, because my opinion has no weight whatsoever. I can simply tell you that from my perspective, I can't imagine being offended at being asked by my girlfriend or wife if she can come along. I mean, I'll tell you what, my wife doesn't actually often come along on my seminars, and she doesn't come along because she doesn't like being in the spotlight. She would love to come if nobody knew she was my wife. But as soon as people find out she's my wife, they're all over. What's he really like? Right. So that would be, you know, this is so in the For What It's Worth column. That might be a way to bring it up. Hey, you know, are you cool with me coming along? You know, would you rather I pretended I don't know you? You could have the conversation right. That way. I generally speaking find the truth works really well. Hey, I'm so confused about whether or not I'm supposed to be paying to come that I phoned a radio show to ask them. What do you think? You know, that usually works.
Oh, God, this is horrible. But yeah, I mean, I would still really like to go on all of his stuff. He's fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
And I did ask him if it would be awkward for me to be there, and he said, no, absolutely not. But so I'm going to have to say, do I get the girlfriend discount of free, you know?
Yeah, well, no, okay, here's my real question for you, Diane. Okay, I do actually have a question for you.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you ask? Like, why is that an awkward question?
Right, that's my thinking part, because I feel like that, number one, he should have said something, and number two, it's kind of like a feeling of rejection or that fear of somebody, me asking for something I feel like they should have offered. And
yeah,
whenever I ask, and it feels like I'm asking for too much or something. I'm not quite sure, but there's a fear there.
Right. So, and this is, again, this is so not a you thing. This is a people thing. But we make up what should happen. We get then upset or concerned or anxious or worried about it not happening. And then we try to act from that place of confusion and lostness. So we're three layers deep in our own mental crap before we even get round to attempting an action. Now, if you didn't have any thinking about it, it would kind of be an obvious question. Hey, am I supposed to pay for this?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yes.
And that's sort of there's something about being able to just kind of cut through your own mental noise, because it's just a question. I mean, the question that it sounds to me like you're afraid of asking is our relationship to the point where you have sufficient respect and consideration for me as your partner that you're going to put our relationship above any financial gain that you might get by having me attend the seminar as a paying attendee?
Yikes.
Yeah, that's horrible question, right? I don't want to be asked that question either. But hey, do you want me to pay for this thing? Like, I got no problem with that one.
And I'm sure that there's a part of it that they do have to pay for the facility, you know, but still, right? Okay. All right. I'm just going to quit thinking about it and just ask them.
There you go. Please, if you get the chance and if you can do it, I'd love you to let us know on the Facebook page how it goes.
Okay. All right, I will. Thank you.
All right,
so much.
Dan. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's just such a great example, though, right? It really sounds like it's about money. It's not about money. It's about respect. It's about this. It's about that. It's about relationship. It's about thinking. And the more we have on our mind, the more difficult and complicated life seems. And the less we have on our mind, the simpler life seems. I think I mentioned this on last week's show, but I just had a beautiful conversation with one of my colleagues in the Three Principles, Ken Manning. And he talked about the big insight that he had when he first started studying the mind and studying thought and studying consciousness, was that we're all fine. We just overthink things. And when we stop overthinking money, we usually get some pretty good ideas about how to work with it in our lives. Let's go out to Lake George, New York, and talk with Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm well.
Good. I have to tell you this because you're the first person that I saw that gave this example, and you're just talking about having more on our mind. And I think it was you had like a picture of a little guy, and it said more on mind and then less on mind. And it was really, really funny. I saw a couple.
You know, bizarrely, I was watching that video this very, like an hour ago, that video.
I was going through an old journal and I just saw it. And I remembered how profound that was for me. So that's kind of.
Yeah. If anyone wants to see that, by the way, I happen to know because I just watched it. It's on, if you go to supercoach.com and you click on About Michael Neal, it's part of the video that's on that page, so you can see it for yourself.
And it makes sense. And I know this week, I think my theme is, well, it's more than just this week, as I am terrified and overthinking my financial situation.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's all over. I find myself like, my husband and I have been actually bringing in a lot more income than we were in the past couple of weeks. And then something happened with our bank account, and a security cushion I thought was there was kind of taken away. And now I'm just like terrified that I'm not going to be able to pay for rent and pay my utility bills and just the same sort of struggling and wondering where it's going to come from. And then I got some help today from my mother, which was just tremendous. And then there's guilt attached to that, to needing help. And we're in a better situation than we were a month ago. And I still find myself needing help and wondering where the hell the money is going to come from.
So there's a couple of different things going on, and I'll just kind of speak because they're universals, right?
Okay.
And then you can kind of tell me how you relate to them. So the first reason that in my experience people have a lot of thinking about money is because they have money wired up with survival.
Yeah.
Right? Now there may be a certain level at which, you know, if you have absolutely no money, no access to resource, you don't know anybody, you're in a country where you don't speak the language, you have a mental illness that prevents you from asking for help, and you haven't eaten in 7 days, okay, maybe.
Right.
But that really isn't most people's situation. It feels like it is, but it isn't. And I've seen it even to the extreme. I've talked about on other programs how I did a program in Sweden, a Millionaire Mind program. And one of the questions that I asked people is, you know, how long could you go without earning any additional money before you would be on the street? And generally speaking, you know, the answer was, you know, months to years. But one of the women who'd expressed all her fears about survival and money, you know, very sheepishly, you know, said 30 years. Once she did the math, and I'm not suggesting that that's necessarily your case, but we all do that to an extent. We somehow connect up, not knowing how we're going to pay for something a week from now, with having our head on the chopping block in the moment. And the problem with that is it puts us into a terrible state of mind to try and do anything from. It's like when you're all worried and fear and caught up in all that thinking in your head, you're probably going to make a mess brushing your teeth, let alone trying to sort out your business. So that's the first thing, is kind of seeing money isn't survival in this moment. Now, the second thing is money isn't well-being. Right? We equate money with well-being. We really think, no matter how many studies show us that it isn't true, that if we had more money, we would be happier. And the evidence simply does not stack up. It's simply not true. It is as blatantly untrue to say that, in most cases, than it is to say, if I were a celebrity, I would be happier and my marriage would go better.
Right.
Right. We kind of know it just doesn't work that way. And yet people still think, oh, I want to be a celebrity. I want to be famous. I want to be this. Right. Now, the real reason that money does not equate with well-being is because well-being is innate. It simply is a part of our nature. It's our innate health. It's that which we were born into. And nothing, including a lack of money or a ton of money, can change that. You know, there's a beautiful expression I remember reading years ago. Philip Yancey wrote a book called What's So Amazing About Grace. And his definition of unconditional love was that unconditional love means that there's nothing you can do that will make God love you any more, and there's nothing you can do that will make God love you any less. Well, well-being works the same way. It's innate. There is no amount of money you can have that will give you more well-being. And there is no lack of money that you can experience that will give you less well-being. There is an amount of thinking that can contribute to your lack of well-being, because it gets between you and your awareness of your innate peace, your core, who you really are at essence, that is untouched by this world and cannot be touched by this world. But that's all it can do. It isn't the money. It's the thinking. So with me so far?
I'm sorry?
Are you with me so far? Is this making sense?
Yeah, I am. No, I can think back, like a couple weeks ago, we were just kind of, like I said, our income was like almost non-existent. Through the holidays, but it didn't feel like it. Like, I mean, it kind of did, but But we were okay. You know, we were getting by, and we had really accepted that things were changing. My husband just got a great new job and regular paychecks from it. And like I said, our income doubled since 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it's like now I'm thinking about it more. And now that I'm thinking about it more, I find scarcity. But
see, and that's the funny thing is it feels like thinking about it more will make it safer. And we'll get you to do better.
Right.
Right. We think, you know, it's, I read this morning that, you know, worry is designed to get rid of worry. It doesn't work.
No.
but that's why we do it. Like, right. You know, if I just worry about this more, I won't be worried about it.
Yeah. No, worry never fixes anything.
So when you start to see that that's just the nature of thought, we live in the feeling of our thinking, we live in an experience of a thought-created world, then it doesn't really make much sense if we're living in a thought-created hell to think about it more. Because here's also part of the nature of thought is it's incredibly fluid. And the moment we let go of one train of thought, we go back to point zero. We go back to the infinite creative potential of thought. And then new thought will come. And that new thought, generally speaking, if it's not better, at least it'll be different. And because there's a sort of an intelligence behind the system that tends towards our own well-being, in other words, the mind is designed for success. It will give us the thoughts that support us in what we really want to create. Well, once we let go of this world that we've created where it's really tough and it's really tight and it's really scary, we're now not trying to get better at navigating in that world. We're living in a whole new world where money doesn't mean what we thought it means. It doesn't mean that we're bad if we don't have much of it and good if we have a lot, or bad if we have a lot and good if we don't have much. It's just a means of exchange.
Yeah. And I'm starting to see that. And I mean, I'm starting to see the balance too. Like when money comes in and I mean, that it needs to go back out again and then come back in again. And that's just part of, I mean, it's an energy exchange, if you will. So I don't know. I'm starting to see, and I'm starting to look at how I was raised thinking about money isn't necessarily what has to be true. And I know that a lot of my fear around money is based on my past experiences, and it's always been kind of an up in the air topic for me.
Here's what's kind of fun, Sarah. Here's what's kind of a little bit different to maybe the way that a lot of people think about it, but might be a nice change of pace. Instead of thinking, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but this is really for everyone based on what you've been saying. Instead of trying to get better thinking about money, if you just, as best you can, let go of the thinking you've got. Like blah, 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 money, be me, horrible, evil, guilty, bad, blah, 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 right? You just let that go and see what comes to take its place.
Yeah.
Because there is a wisdom in all of us, and it really will guide us if we let it. And one of the reasons that we don't seem wise sometimes is because we've got so much of our own thinking in the way that we really kind of can't see the wisdom for the trees. So would you be up for as a sort of a little 1 week experiment?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's just as best you can when money thoughts come up, wave goodbye to them and see what else comes up.
Okay.
And I think what you'll find, because I know this, you know, from a lot of experience with a lot of people, including myself, is you already know a lot more than you think.
Yeah, it's just turning the moron mind off, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
You're welcome. Bye. You know, it's funny. You'd think that you'd learn the most about money when you have to look at it. And there may be some truth in that, but I've learned probably the most useful things I've learned about money when I've had it. Like, that was a real surprise to me, because when I didn't have money, I assumed that the reason that I worried about money was because I didn't have money. That seemed logical, and it seemed like if I had it, then I wouldn't worry about it anymore. And I was so surprised that I had the same kind of thinking. I would worry about, yeah, but what if I lose it? Yeah, but is this enough? Yeah, but, and I mean, I remember 1 month I had literally earned more that month than I had earned in a couple of years previously. And I was still worrying about money. And that was one of those moments, one of those Homer Simpson dope moments where I got, wow, it really isn't about the money. I'm just in the habit of worrying. And at some level, this doesn't look crazy to me. This looks like maybe it's a good thing. Like maybe I'm staying safe. Maybe I'm keeping sharp by keeping this on my mind and thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. But anything that we keep on our minds and think about and think about and think about becomes toxic. You know, it's like milk, right? Fresh milk, fresh thought is beautiful. It's nourishing. It's delicious. It's amazing. But if you keep the same milk the next day, it's not quite as fresh. And if you keep it the next day and the next day and the next day, and you try and keep drinking that milk months from now, it's going to be pretty horrible. And it's going to start making you sick. But fresh milk is always available. Fresh new thinking is one thought away. It's what comes through that space of not knowing. Hey, I don't know what to do. Great. Be with that. Let something come through that space. Hey, you know, I'm beginning to question whether my views of money are right. Well, great. Let them go and see what you can see. Not try and get better. Now, this is I mentioned this on the call, but this is a really important distinction. It's not about trying to have better thinking about money. It's simply letting go of the crap you currently have in there and letting fresh new thinking come through, because that fresh new thinking will be relevant to you. That fresh new thinking won't be a rehash of your old beliefs about money or someone else's old beliefs about money. It will be what you can see for yourself, and what you can see for yourself is yours to keep. And one of the interesting things, and it's just an interesting thing that I found in my explorations from the, you know, the happy millionaires and the miserable millionaires, the happy homeless and the miserable homeless, is that well-being was a lot more to do with a measure of how little somebody thought about money than how much money they had, which means that you can get that for yourself right now. You don't need to wait until you have more money or less money to begin to have a richer experience of life independent of your current financial status. And ironically and wonderfully, then if you do have a use for money, it's amazing how many great ideas you'll have about where to find it and how to create it. Let's go out to Florida. Let's talk with Patricia. Patricia, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. I listen to it every chance I get.
Thank you.
I'm calling to see if you can help me. I had my own business, and I was as a consultant in providing services to a number of companies. And the biggest company I was working for kept on piling work on me. And I said, look, I need to submit some bills to you. Do you want me to do this work, or do you want me to submit a bill? And they said, oh, no, please just do the work. We promise we'll pay you. Well, it turns out that company turns around and claims bankruptcy. They were also under an SEC investigation. So while I was watching that going on, I got very sick with cancer. and was fighting for my life for the next number of years. It turns out now that it probably would have been the most money I would have ever made in business by myself for over 30 years. And I did not submit any billing because I thought the company had folded. It turns out they're alive and kicking. And I just wonder, can I submit billing to these people that's 10 years old now that they're still alive and still in work? But in the meantime, I hate myself to pieces for not being prompt with my billing, which is a basic business activity. And I was so busy pleasing the customers that I did nothing to please myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very upset with myself. And I'm wondering, do you have any insight to help me forgive myself? And or do you have any sense of anything that perhaps I can still turn around and build a company?
Well, let me deal with the second one first, okay? That's a straightforward legal question, and so that's something to ask somebody with a legal background, and they will guide you. I can't imagine that you can't, there's nothing that's going to stop you from submitting a bill, how obligated they are to pay you, how inclined they are to pay you, no idea. That's okay. Outside my remit. But that's a straightforward question. There will be an answer to that question.
I hope. Thank you. But the attorneys I have talked with, they kind of just shrug their shoulders and say, well, there's really no statute that they can think of in this state or federally. Mm-hmm. They just use a law of common behavior. That's mm-hmm. what they reference, which I guess that means billing within 30 days or something.
Well, that's one of those ones where for the hour it would take you to prepare the bill, I'm not sure that there's any reason not to have a go. But okay. That's outside my particular specialty. I can just tell you, I'd try it. But in terms of the first part, I think a lot of why the second part doesn't seem maybe as straightforward to you as it does to me is because of that first part, is because you've got all these ideas about what you should have done or what you could have done and how much different your life would be if you had done it.
Right.
Now, it wouldn't matter what the content of your story was. That would drive you nuts, right? Yeah. I could take any human being and set up that thinking, that thought structure, right? Here's what I want you to do. Okay, try this at home, kids. It'll be fun, okay? I want you to make a list of everything you did that didn't work out. Decide that it was your fault, and if only you'd been paying closer attention or been a better, smarter person, you wouldn't have done it. Then take everything bad that's ever happened in your life and connect it up to that as the effect, indirectly or directly, of those terrible things that you did and decisions that you made, and see what happens.
Oh, God.
Right? It's just mean.
It is. And I have been so cruel to myself because of this.
So then let me ask you this, Patricia, because it sounds like you do have some perspective on that. What do you make of the fact that you can see that that's just a mean-ass thing to do to oneself, and you're still doing it?
Well, what I'm doing is almost like a penance.
Mm-hmm.
I am tearing out my office. Everything's been closed. Since I got diagnosed with cancer, I closed the business. And I'm finally now starting to get rid of the things, the means of doing that business. And it really is like a penance, seeing material from the 90s and looking at how crazy I was with all of my work and my activities. And so I'm putting myself through this penance of cleaning it up and vowing never to do that work again, ever. And yet I was so good.
Yeah. Did you ever see the movie The Mission?
No.
I talk about it from time to time. It's I don't remember how good it is overall, but it's certainly worth watching the first hour. If some of it's quite beautiful, but also there's a scene. I'm going to share this scene. There's a character in there played by Robert De Niro, and he was a soldier. And he comes to see the cost to his soul of soldiering. And he decides to become a priest and go live with the missionaries. And as his penance, he carries all the armor of, and I can't remember, I think it's of all the men who died under his command. And he drags it up this mountain. And it's his penance. And yes. Finally, one of the priests just reaches over, takes one of the swords and cuts it loose. Mm-hmm. And it goes, and he has a bit of a religious epiphany. He's suddenly set free. Now, we do that, but we do that in our thoughts.
Right.
We carry these thoughts with us up the mountain, making the mountain seem like much more of a mountain, by the way, as we do it. Because at some level, we think that's going to cleanse our soul. It's actually the only thing that is between us and the natural perfection of our soul as it is right now already.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So here's my question for you. Would you be willing to start fresh right now? I don't know what that means. I don't know what that looks like. I'm not saying that has to look like anything.
Right.
But would you be willing to start from a clean slate from right now?
Yes, I would. And I'm getting closer to that action with the more I take out of my office, because it's all going to dwindle down to those folders that hold those invoices.
But that's a little bit different to what I'm saying. I'm talking about.
I'm going to destroy. My thoughts were I was going to have to destroy those invoices that were not submitted, and walk away from this kind of work for my health. I mean, this is pretty much.
What I'm saying is a little bit different to that, Patricia. I am saying right now, without doing one other thing in the world, without burning anything, throwing anything out, saving anything, doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing, if I could in this moment, take my sword and cut the strings of that armor that you've been carrying up the mountain?
Yes, I would welcome it. I would welcome it. I just quite don't know how to turn off my brain.
Well, here's the good news, is you don't need to.
Okay.
Because all that stuff in your brain is just ephemeral. It's transient. It's just an energy, a creative energy that has been in a certain form for so long, it seems like more than that. And the minute you take away the desire in you to perpetuate it, the minute you really decide, you know what, I'm done. I may or may not be able to shut off my brain, but I don't need my brain to keep doing this to me. It will begin to change all by itself.
Oh, you know, thank you for saying this, because when I got my diagnosis of stage 4 lymphoma and was told I might have 2 months left to live, I sure wasn't thinking about that billing.
Mm-hmm.
And during my battle and during the chemo and during stem cell transplant and just at this time of rehab, the billing really was not in my head. Living my life and surviving was what was in my head. But now that I'm a little better, I've been playing with my brain again. So, you know, thank you for what you've said. It will help me further embrace living without this around my neck.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Patricia. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thank you. And have a good day.
You too. I mean, that was beautiful what she was saying right at the end there, that actually she already knows what it's like to not carry this with her. It was just an old habit she was starting to slip back into. And it really doesn't serve us. Our worrying about money neither cures our worry nor helps us have more money. It just fills our brain and our system up with noise, which makes it harder for us to hear our own wisdom. It makes it harder for us to feel our own joy. It makes us stupider, and it makes us more miserable. Other than that, it's a wonderful plan. So if we don't want to be stupider and more miserable, what do? Right? That would be the obvious next question. If we want to be at our best in relation to money, how do we do that? Well, the same way we be at our best in relation to anything. when you start to see that your best self is always there, right? It's here now listening to me. There's nothing you have to do to find it. It is listening. It is what is listening through your ears. It is what is looking through your eyes. And what happens is that from time to time, we get caught up in our thinking, which doesn't look like thinking. It looks real. No, it's not my thinking, it's money. No, it's not my thinking, it's my boyfriend. No, it's not my thinking, it's the radio show guy, right? It's always our thinking because that's the only mechanism we have as human beings to experience life. We experience life via the medium of thought, broadened to our senses through consciousness, all part of this larger energy of perfection we call mind, a universal mind, a universal consciousness, a universal gift of thought. But when we start using it for ourselves and we get into our personal thinking about how we should be and what we should do and what we should have and what other people should do, when we get into our ego thinking, our personality thinking, we make ourselves, and then we make ourselves miserable. First we make ourselves, then we make ourselves miserable. Then we come up with strategies to make our miserable selves less miserable. And those strategies often involve trying to go out and get more money. So here's how messed up this is. And I'm not saying I don't do it, okay? But you know, there's a saying, if you're nuts, but you know that you're nuts, you're not quite as nuts. Well, that's where I like to think I'm fitting right now. So here's what we do. First, we make up ourselves. We make up that we're separate from the whole. We make up that I'm not really part of life. I'm not really the ocean. I'm just this little wave or this little drop of water. I'm not really connected to the whole. I'm on my own. I mean, other people, they're connected to the whole, but I'm on my own. And I'm not going to be okay unless, and then I have my list of unlesses. And then I want to be okay, so let me go out and make money because that will help take care of a bunch of things on my list. Well, we're so far removed from reality by the time we start trying to make money that it's like the fruit of the poisonous tree, right? That's an old legal term, that if the fundamental evidence is flawed, every conclusion that can be made from that evidence is the fruit of the poisonous tree. It's all dismissible in a court of law. Well, once we've made the fundamental mistake of thinking that we're not part of the whole, once we've created this separate self with its separate needs and desires that unless they're met, won't be okay. So we're not aware of that innate well-being that we're a part of. We're separate. We've put the boundaries up. We've gone into mine and yours. We've gotten stuck in a stage of childhood development. Now look, you go from 3 years old to 5 years old. Me and mine is really useful, right? It's a stage of development, but we get stuck in that stage. We go from the impersonal that we're born into the personal. But most of us get stuck in the personal for the next 70 years. And we never get to the transpersonal. We stunt our own evolution spiritually into the wholeness that we are, that is beyond our personality. It's not that we don't have a personality. Everybody's got a personality. Some people not much of a personality, but everybody's got one. But we get caught up in thinking that that is who we are. And that's just a stage of development. And as you step more and more into that transpersonal, where you have a personality, but you are not that personality. You have a body, but you are not that body. You have a name, but you are not your name. You have thoughts, but you are not those thoughts. You have experiences. But the you who's having those experiences isn't the experience itself. You are the experiencer. You are the creator of those experiences via thought, not consciously, but you are the mechanism through which thought comes into form. You are the mind of God. You are the mind, the energy, the intelligence behind life. And the first personal creation is the person. And all of your thinking about money, I promise you, is a person's thinking about money. They're that character that you have created, wittingly or unwittingly, knowingly or unknowingly. It's that character's thinking about money. It's that character's story about money. I mean, we've made money up. You do know that, right? There's no such thing as money. It's made up. Now, we made it up for a purpose. In our world of form, in our world of separation, in our world of humanness, which is a world that I inhabit and you inhabit and we all inhabit, it's a really useful tool, right? It's a really useful means of exchange so we don't have to carry chickens around. So I can say, hey, I'd love some corn, and not have to carry a chicken around and get the chicken out and go, hey, swap you my chicken for your corn. It's not a sign of being a good person. It's not a sign of being a bad person. It's a way of not carrying chickens around. And having a way of not carrying chickens around is not holding you back in your life. I promise you that. But all of those ideas that you've got about the importance of your chicken carrying around substitute, that probably is holding you back. And if it's not holding you back, at the very least, it's probably driving you nuts. And if it's not driving you nuts, it's probably driving some of the people in your life a little bit nuts. And that's innocent, right? We don't do it on purpose, right? I have never once set out to make a bad decision, right? I have never once set out to do something that didn't work and that caused harm to other people. And yet, sometimes things don't work out. And sometimes people tell me that the things that I've done caused harm to them, and I apologize because that was not my intention. Well, some of the stuff you've done with money probably hasn't worked out as you would have hoped. And so if you're inclined to, you can apologize to yourself and move on. Right? If in trying to get somewhere in a bit of a hurry, I step on somebody's toes, I will apologize, and I may even feel a bit bad about it. But I'm not going to spend the next 20 years of my life or even the next 20 minutes of my life beating myself up for it. That's not making their toe feel any better. And it's certainly not making me any smarter or any less likely to step on somebody else's toes in the future. See, we step on a lot less toes when we're present to where we are, when we're not up in our thinking, when we're not lost in our heads. We do a lot less damage when we're conscious of where we are. We make our way in the world with a lot more ease and grace and success when we open ourselves up to a deeper intelligence inside us, to a deeper wisdom beyond our personal thinking. There's a common sense in us that knows what to do if we don't have a lot of thinking about why we shouldn't have to do it or we shouldn't do it, right? Right. This is an old Zen story. There's actually a number of Zen stories like this, where the student will ask the master, what is the essence of Zen? And the master will say to the student, have you eaten? And the student goes, yeah. Well, then clean your bowl. Are you cold? Yeah. Put on a jacket. Are you thirsty? Yeah. Have a drink. There's a simplicity to life And if it ever doesn't feel simple, I promise you, it's because you're up in your head thinking about it, trying to figure it out, trying to work out the implications, trying to play the angles. And we're designed to be like Peter Sellers in Being There, right? You ever see that? Chauncey Gardner? I mean, that's obviously a bit of an extreme where he was just a complete innocent. And yet everything worked out for him. Now, we don't have to be innocent in that way. We don't have to be ignorant. We can bring the innocence of our innate self to everything. We can bring the purity of our core, our nature, into everything that we do. And it will have that flavor. And any money that we make will be God-flavored money. It will be love-flavored money. It will be life-flavored money. It will be innocent money. And the money that we create with all our thinking and with all our doing and with all our planning will be thought-flavored money. Now, you know, thought-flavored money and God-flavored money will buy you the same cup of coffee at Starbucks. But you'll have a different life while you're drinking it. And ultimately, that's really the reason that money can't hold us back. It can't hold us back from what matters most, which is living a rich life. Now, you can live a rich life with a lot of money, or you can live a rich life with none. Because the richness in life comes from the depth of feeling that we carry with us. It comes from the depth of love that we feel. It comes from the depth of connection that we feel. It comes from the life force that comes through us, our capacity for life. That's what thriving is, right? Something thrives. It's filled with life. It is abundant in life. That is our nature. We are made to thrive. But we choke out that life energy with the weeds of our own thinking, and we cultivate the freaking weeds. Right. I mean, it's, you know, people always say, well, how do I stop growing the stuff? Stop planting more of it. You want less crazy thinking in your head. Stop thinking about it so much. Easier said than done, Michael. Sure. Sure. At one level. But the truth is the system is already rigged in our favor. The mind is designed to settle. Right? If I shake up water with dirt in it, it'll be dirty water. And if I leave it to sit, it'll be clear water with sediment back at the bottom. If I stir up my thinking and worry about this and worry about that and try to figure out this and try to figure out that, I'm going to have a head full of muck. And if I leave it to settle and have a really clear head, and there might still be some thoughts floating around in there, but they aren't doing anyone any harm. What if they're negative thoughts? Then there's little bits of negative thought floating around in there. What if they're positive thoughts? Then there are little bits of positive thought floating around in there. But the clarity and purity of the water is where its refreshment comes from. That's what refreshes us. That's what renews us. That's what brings us back to life. So is money holding you back? No. No, it isn't. Are you holding yourself back? Not in any meaningful, purposeful way. Can you make more money? Absolutely. Of course you can. And it'll be so much easier when you have less on your mind and you listen to your own wisdom and creativity and you allow it through and you let it be easy and you let it be fun. And I hope you've had some insights today. You can share them on the Facebook page, facebook.com/mneil. And until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.